Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, August 6th, 2013, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Our very special guest this evening is Emmy-nominated casting director Craig Campobasso, whose work in films has been seen by all of us, even if we didn't know it. His long list of movie and TV credits include major works like Dune and Picket Fences, for which he was nominated for an Emmy. Others include Sky Captain and The World of Tomorrow with Jude Law and Angelina Jolie, and Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories. He's currently working on his short film, A Stranger at the Pentagon, and a documentary called Bashar, First Contact. He had a spiritual awakening at 26 and started receiving communication from other dimensions. And on 11-11-11, his book was published called Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga, I Am Thyron. If I tried to list all Craig's achievements, we'd have less time to chat with him. So after the show, please make sure you visit his websites, which are CraigCampobasso.com, and that's C-R-A-I-G, C-A-M-P-O-B-A-S-S-O.com, and AutobiographyofanET.com, and StrangerAtThePentagon.com. Make sure you check it out. So we are in the process of gathering the next soul group to go with us to Arkansas to dig for Atlantean crystals, experience crystal activations, and reconnect with soul family. The date is October 8th through the 14th. And if you have 25, 26, or 27 degrees of Taurus, Scorpio, Aquarius, or Leo, Capricorn, or Cancer on your natal or progress chart, you have the rites of passage to participate. We have some spots still available, and you can learn more if you send an email to crystals, that's C-R-Y-S-T-A-L-S, at starseedhotline.com. We'd like to thank Chris for hosting our switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments or questions, and the number to dial is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you like our show, we'd appreciate your support by clicking follow on our show page. If you're new to our show, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where you can find a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge, and the entire site has been coded for Starseed activation. We have a forum for Starseeds at starseedhotline.ning.com, and we'd like to thank Rose and Tammy for their great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed Forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go, or download them right from our show page archives. And we will be getting to the news in just a moment with Anastasia. But first, I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. And remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. If you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. Please allow at least 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure that you get it in time. And if you'd like a Stage 2 reading to interpret your solar return energies beyond just knowing when the window is, make sure you book it about 2 months before your birthday, since we do have a waiting list. And now I would like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Good evening, ladies.
I'm here. Hi. Lavendar here. Anastasia,
you
there?
Yes, yeah. I'm here. Hi, everybody.
There's always that second of, okay, are you going to talk first or am I going to talk first?
I know.
That's right. That's right.
Game's all here.
Well, so have you had a lot of rain where you are, Anastasia?
No, but it's very cloudy and humid, and it looks like it wants to rain. How about you? Have you had a lot?
No, but we had a lot up north. But we had a little bit here for about 5 days. You know, when that storm came from the east, we had some rain. I guess that was the last of the rain. Now it's 103 degrees.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's really terrible for your area. So humid and hot. Well, that's
on
the West storm.
On the NBC News several days ago, Brian Williams said that a big electrical hit from the sun came and it missed us. And had it hit us, it would have knocked down all of the electricity and computers and everything off the planet. Did you hear anything about that?
I'm going to talk about that tonight.
Okay,
as
good.
A matter
go
of fact,
for it, girl.
As a matter of fact, that's a faulty report, but we're going to get to that in a minute. And, yeah, that was a big event. It started with the Washington Examiner, but I'll get to that in just a second. So we will start off tonight's news by talking about the sun. And I need to tell you right now that no sunspots are actively flaring. Solar activity remains low, which is significant to what we're going to talk about with this EM pulse they were talking about. Anyway, this morning the new moon passed in front of the sun, off-center, producing a partial solar eclipse, but it was only visible from space. So that's been going on out of our view, but interesting for astrologers. Maybe that would be of interest to you, Lavendar. There was a geomagnetic storm, however, that's true. A solar wind stream hit Earth's magnetic field on the 5th, sparking a G1 class geomagnetic storm and auroras over several northern tier states in the United States. But spaceweather.com has reported that there was a report in the Washington Examiner, which I checked out and was true. It was kind of an alarmist piece, that stated that a Carrington class solar storm narrowly missed Earth 2 weeks ago. Now, spaceweather.com says that there was no Carrington-class solar storm 2 weeks ago. On the contrary, solar activity was low throughout the month of July. The report is therefore erroneous. Now, they say the possibility of such a storm is worth thinking about because a modern Carrington event would cause significant damage to our high-tech society. Now, a Carrington-class flare, what is that? Well, in 1859, a 33-year-old astronomer saw a white light solar flare from his telescope, which was the magnetic explosion on the sun. And just before dawn that next day, skies all over the Earth erupted in red and green and purple, auroras that were so brilliant that newspapers could be read in at night as easily as the daytime. And even more disconcerting, telegraph systems worldwide went haywire. Spark discharges shocked telegraph operators and set the telegraph paper on fire. And even when the telegraphers disconnected the batteries powering those lines, aurora-induced electrical currents in the wires still allowed messages to be transmitted. Now, that is a very powerful electromagnetic surge in our atmosphere from what now they call a Carrington-class solar storm or solar flare. So that report in the Washington Examiner was erroneous. I read it. They got it from a gentleman who was giving a report to a group of people, and they quoted him, and it's just not so. So I don't know who's tracking down why that was said or why all the news agencies picked up on that one report, and nobody has, I guess, publicly redacted it except spaceweather.com has said that it's wrong. So, however, we do have some very interesting things happening on the sun, even though solar activity remains low. You know, just as Earth scientists watch our planet's polar regions for signs of climate change, well, solar physicists do the same thing for the sun. And they say something big is about to happen on the sun soon, within the next few months. According to measurements from NASA-supported observatories, the sun's huge magnetic field is about to flip. It looks like we're no more than 3 to 4 months away from a complete magnetic field reversal, says a solar physicist from Stanford. And he says this change will have ripple effects throughout the solar system. Now, the Earth's magnetic field changes polarity approximately every 11 years. It happens at the peak of each solar cycle. And since 1976, they've recorded 3 grand reversals, with the fourth just about to happen. A reversal of the sun's magnetic field is, literally, an enormous event. The domain of the sun's magnetic influence, which is also known as the heliosphere, extends billions of kilometers beyond Pluto. Now, changes to the field's polarity ripple all the way out to the Voyager probes on the doorstep of interstellar space. Now, solar field reversal, you probably ought to know, is influenced by what's called the current sheet. And the current sheet is a sprawling surface outward from the sun's equator, where the sun's slowly rotating magnetic field induces an electrical current. So during field reversals, the current sheet becomes very wavy. And as Earth orbits the sun, we dip in and out of the current sheet. Just think of a little boat floating on a really wavy, you know, ocean on those currents. And transitions from one side to another can stir up stormy space weather around the planet. And cosmic rays, by the way, are also affected. Some researchers say that it could affect the cloudiness and the climate of Earth. So they're really watching that. And they say that this is now going to be halfway through the solar maximum. So that is what's going on. The sun's been very interesting, and metaphysically as well as physiologically, or rather, you know, in the terms of physics. So anyway, there have been the Perseid fireballs that have been reported. Earth is entering a stream of debris from Comet Swift-Tuttle, the source of the annual Perseid meteor shower. Now, forecasters expect the shower to peak on August 12th to the 14th, when Earth transits the densest part of the debris stream. And the first Perseid fireballs, they say, are arriving now. And speaking of that, a meteor was streaking across the sky over northeastern Pennsylvania on the 3rd of August, and a meteorite hit a village in northwest China. A meteorite hit that little village, and I don't even know the name. I can't say that for you guys. It doesn't matter. You wouldn't remember anyway. But the meteorite crashed at a dump site in the village around 2 o'clock in the morning, and it punched a 3-meter wide, 2-meter deep hole in the ground. And so local authorities say no casualties have been reported, and investigation and research on the meteorite fragments is ongoing. So anyway, that happened. But there was also a bright fireball in the sky over Tennessee and Alabama that occurred on Monday, yesterday. So any of you Starseed listeners that have seen that or seen any other types of fireballs in the sky, please do send me email about that. And I want to thank, by the way, all the great people who sent me leads for news this week. You've all been helpful. We got some great reporters on the ground out there. And from Cheryl, who sent this to us, and straight from the NASA website, we learn that NASA has videoed Saturn at the poles, which is showing what they call an impossible hexagon-shaped cloud. It's a pattern larger than Earth, a lot larger than Earth. And they're saying that it's a very strange feature. It's covering the poles of Saturn, lying in a precise geometric fashion with six nearly equally straight sides. And they say they've never seen anything like that on any other planet. It's fascinating. You can see it on the Internet. The hexagon is 60 miles deep and 15,000 miles wide. That's four Earths would fit inside of it. And they cannot say that it's natural. They're scratching their heads over this thing. They don't know what it is. And that's not all there is to it. Because inside this hexagon, this six-sided cloud, there is a three-sided pyramid shape. And inside the pyramid is the shape of an all-seeing eye. You can clearly see it in the center of the pyramid shape, which is inside of the hexagon. Now, you know, you can just think a lot about what the heck is that. And so, Lavendar, if you got any takes on that later, I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about it. You can take a week or two to think about it if you want to. But this hexagon on Saturn could be a natural phenomenon. It could possibly be explained through the scientific field of cymatics. Now, cymatics is a study of how sound can alter the physical structure of materials, creating very interesting structural patterns. But whatever this is, it's most definitely a really big mystery that nobody right now has an answer to. So fascinating stuff, you know, with their probes and telescopes and all the things that we're doing now, going deeper and deeper into space. They're just finding all kinds of stuff. It's just a great time to be alive. Well, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I freeze things like popsicles and frozen vegetables and, you know, this, that, and the other thing, ice cream, whatever, juices. Isn't that what you generally freeze? You guys use freezers for things like that.
Sure.
You never think about freezing something like light. And this is from Chris and the IO9 website. And this is a story about how scientists have now frozen light for an entire 60 seconds. And they say this could be a breakthrough in quantum memory storage and information processing, because German researchers have frozen the fastest thing in the universe, light, and they did so for a record-breaking 1 minute. Now, it sounds weird, and it is, but the reason for wanting to hold light in place is to ensure that it retains its quantum coherence properties. Example, its information state, thus making it possible to build light-based quantum memory. Whoa, man, this is like Star Trek stuff, okay? And the longer that light can be held, the better, because as far as the computation is concerned, it could allow for more secure quantum communications over longer distances. Isn't that something?
Wow.
Freezing light.
I love it.
By the way, the technicalities of that. Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, all this stuff's interconnected. You know that. I know that. Listeners know that. But the details of that was just far too technical to share on the show. But if you want to look that up, any of you that are interested in all of the, you know, the science of it, check it out. And this came from Lavendar and Ivan and BBC News. And I'll bet you all will already be familiar with this. There's been studies, researchers have found evidence that a full moon disturbs a good night's sleep. They say that lunar influence in a study of 33 volunteers sleeping in tightly controlled laboratory conditions has showed that it's not just an old wives' tale that a full moon will mess with your sleeping. Now, you know, melatonin, I'm sure most of you realize, is linked to that natural body clock cycles. And when it's dark, the body makes more melatonin, and it produces less when it's light outside. And when you're exposed to bright lights in the evening or you get too little light during the day, it can disrupt the body's normal melatonin cycles. That's why they're suggesting that a lot of us modern people who live indoors so much take melatonin, because we're not getting enough sunlight. Anyway, having said that, the work in what's called Current Biology from Basel University in Switzerland suggests that the moon's effect on human sleep cycles may be unrelated to its brightness, because the volunteers were unaware of the purpose of the study and could not see the moon from their beds in the lab. So findings have revealed that around the full moon, brain activity related to deep sleep dropped by nearly a third, melatonin levels also dropped, and the volunteers took 5 minutes longer to fall asleep and slept for 20 minutes less when there was a full moon. Well, the research results, what they say is the lunar cycle seems to influence human sleep even when one does not see the moon and is not aware of the actual moon phase. It nets up to science now to find out why that's happening and why we sleep differently during the full moon. But, you know, from a shamanic perspective or from a nature perspective or an earth-connected perspective, we just need to recognize what shamans and the ancients have understood for eons, and that is that the human animal, like all animals and life on Mother Earth, are intimately connected to the rhythms and cycles of nature. Because why? Well, we are nature. So maybe it's just that simple. And so this is from Lavendar and from Forbes magazine. Now, this is something I'm drawing to your attention, not to freak you out, but I just think you ought to know about it. And the article was about hackers and the vulnerability of computerized cars today to hacking. They say that your car is no longer just a simple machine of steel, but it's a hackable network of computers. You know, you just don't stop to think about that when you get in your car to drive. And I know that more and more now they're integrating computers into cars. And a couple of researchers named Miller, who's a 40-year-old security engineer, and Vlasic, who's a 31-year-old director of security intelligence, well, these two guys received an $80,000 grant last fall from DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, to find security risks in automobile computer systems. Now, as a result, these researchers have reverse-engineered enough of the software to demonstrate that it's very easy to hack a car's computers. They can blast the horn and do things like slam on the brakes at high speeds. They can kill the power steering. They can alter the GPS, the speedometers and odometers. And they discovered that a car's OnStar cellular connection, Bluetooth bugs, and an Android app that's synced with the car's network from the driver's smartphone, and even a malicious audio file on a CD in the car's stereo system, are all vulnerable entry points that can be used to interfere with normal vehicle safety. Now, car manufacturers say that it's safe, but the researchers are saying, nuh-uh, not. So there you have that. I say let's just pull out the trusty 58 Studebaker out of the barn. Let's just tune it up and let's drive microchip and hacker free. Just bring out the old cars. They're fun anyway. Okay. And this one's from Tammy. I want to thank Tammy. Thanks, Tammy, for this one. They think they might have discovered Atlantis in Brazil. Now, you know, there's a lot of people and a lot of discoveries that say that it might be Atlantis, and people believe it's in a certain area. But, you know, they found a sunken continent in the Indian Ocean earlier this year, and they thought that might be Atlantis. But now scientists have recently discovered another possible Atlantis off the coast of Brazil. Now, the waters surrounding Brazil, and I didn't know this, are some of the least explored in the world. They discovered it out 600 miles from Rio de Janeiro, and it was deeper than 3,000 feet under the water. And they're not sure exactly what it is, but what they saw was an immense heap of granite that was found on the ocean floor. This was photographed by a Japanese sub. And they think that this is proof that this was once a large landmass. Why? Because they say that granite is only formed on land, so any large amount of granite at the bottom of the ocean indicates the presence of a sunken piece of land or possibly a continent. So they're going to wait and see. They're going to investigate that and see what's there. So we don't know, but we're just making all kinds of discoveries in space and on the planet, and now we just need to help people discover more about themselves, because really, you know, the new territory is the consciousness within us, and that, unfortunately, yet is a pretty tight mystery that the world needs to discover. But we're moving in the right direction. A lot of things are getting exposed, and a lot of things are coming to the surface, and like I said earlier, it's a great time to be alive. And for those of you Starseed listeners that have very special children that you need help with ascertaining their energy or how to cope with certain situations to help them grow up in this crazy and exciting and confusing world, please give me a call. I'd love to help you assess what you need to do for your kids or what's going on in your families. And that'll do it for tonight. That wraps up the news for tonight. So I'm looking forward to tonight's show.
As are we. Thank you so much for that great news interest show there, Anastasia, because
you're welcome.
There is a lot of discovery going, and it is a great time to be alive. And right now is a great time to bring on our guest. Lavendar, I've got your mic open, and we are proud to introduce to you Craig Campobasso. Welcome, Craig.
Thank you so much. I love the whole news segment. That was just fascinating. Thank you, Anastasia.
You are very welcome. Thank you.
How are you all?
Well, Craig, this is Lavendar, and I just want to thank you for the package that you sent me. I had read Stranger at the Pentagon many, many years ago, but you sent me a new copy, and I took the time to sit down and read the whole thing, and I got so excited again reading it, thinking, oh, yeah, I remember this and I remember that, but to refresh myself was wonderful. So if you would just start at the very beginning of how this project came to you. Now, you're working on a full-length feature film called Stranger at the Pentagon, and we'll talk about that later at the end. But let's talk about the subject matter and how this all came about and how Frank Strange's, how he wrote this story about a valiant Thor.
Well, I'll start at the beginning and give everybody a sort of capsulized version. The story begins on March 16th, 1957. It was a Saturday morning at 8 a.m., and a giant saucer craft came and landed in a field in Alexandria, Virginia. There were two police officers who reported it, and they were the first that were on the scene. They came upon it. They drew their handguns, and when the gentleman walked out of the craft, they looked at him and saw that this man was so immersed in love that they literally just dropped their weapons and had a conversation with him, which was he had a message for the President of the United States. So they radioed ahead to the Pentagon. They brought him to the Pentagon. He was debriefed by the Secretary of Defense. Mind you, all these people were coming in on their day off. He was taken to meet with Eisenhower, Nixon, and the Joint Chiefs, and he came with a divine design, which was to help eliminate sickness, disease, and poverty, and to prolong life. And the gentleman's name is Valiant Thor, and we later learned that he's a created being, or what we would call an angel in human form. So after this brief meeting with Eisenhower back then, Eisenhower put him on VIP status, and they decided the time duration for him to stay there and go over this proposal and other things would be a 3-year period. So he actually lived and worked there at the Pentagon for 3 years, and then he departed on March 16th, 1960. So the book is primarily about what his main mission is. Dr. Frank Strange is who wrote the book. He was doing a lecture in Washington, D.C. For 2 weeks in just before Christmas time in 1959. One of the high-level Clarence secretaries who had become friends with Valiant Thor, he sent her to go bring Dr. Frank to him, because Dr. Frank spoke about UFOs and you know, all kinds of things, and one of his main things was always UFOs in the Bible. So he would go and point out all of, you know, all of the stuff that was in the Bible as well. So he actually met Valiant Thor. He was brought to the Pentagon, and he met him on Christmas Eve, 1959. They spoke about, you know, Valiant Thor told him many things about himself that he didn't know. But the one thing that Dr. Frank told me that just sent a, you know, sent an all-knowing through him was when he looked firstly through his eyes, he knew that he went into his soul and read his entire soul history. And he, and Dr. Frank said, it is the strangest feeling, but, you know, you feel vulnerable and you feel terrific at the same time. And anyway, he proceeded to tell him things about his life, which he confirmed later on with his parents, that before him there was a baby, a boy, who passed away, and that Dr. Frank actually was going that way when he was born, but he was brought back to life because he had a special mission. So he did get that confirmed from his parents. His parents were very old-school Italians, and, you know, my father's side is the same, and I know that they suppress emotion, and they don't like talking about things that are very uncomfortable, you know, like that. So he had never known about those events. So Valiant Thor left in 1960, and he returned exactly 1 year later, not going back to the Pentagon, but coming here, and has been here ever since. The saucer fleet is called the Victor class saucer. So there's Victor 1, which is Valiant Thor's. There are it houses 200 people, and it's a double decker. It's about either 200,000 or 300,000 feet. I'm not sure. But on the website, if you toggle through the pages, you'll see there's a picture of the poster with the blueprints on it, by the way. So, because I know a lot of people really, really love seeing that. So, so Dr. Frank saw him again in 61 and stayed lifelong friends with him and his crew until he passed away in November of 2008. So the Victor class fleet is actually stationed in and around the Earth at 287 locations. And then there is also a starship that is way above over the earth. That's 14 miles long and 7 miles wide, and that houses all of the beings from around the universe. You know, this is the planet that the whole universe is just enthralled with, because it's the planet of transformation. It's, you know, so everybody is here to help and assist with that transformation. Dr. Frank did visit the Starship on many occasions and was asked to speak about his experiences here on Earth, which he did. And the vice commanders on Victor 1 are Dawn, Teal, and Teal is also a teacher. She teaches everybody in the universe about Earth, and she teaches people on Earth about the universe. Many people are invited on board either through night classes where they may remember or not remember, or they're asked to come on board physically. There's many, many people from around the world who have visited Victor 1 in their physical form. So Thon, T-H-O-N-N, is another vice commander. And then Zan, Z-A-N-N, he is the ship's doctor, and they call him Doc, but he's the doctor for the starseeds. So, and then there is Unaya, who is... He is also a created being from Melchizedek, who was also a active and permanent crew member on board Victor 1. And his associate's name is, it's pronounced Yo, but it's actually spelled Y-E-O. So there's sort of the basis of the story right there.
Well, that's a whole lot of story.
It is a whole lot of story.
I just flipped to the page where it has the map of Las Vegas, Lake Mead, and Victor 1, which is, shows that it was at the very tip of the Las Vegas Bay. I have been there many times. I've had many ET experiences right there on that spot where Victor 1 is on this map.
Yes. Wow. Yes, absolutely. And it's been stationed there. It was originally stationed in Henderson, Nevada, and sometime in the 80s they moved Victor 1 over to Lake Mead. I think it's just a prettier view. You know, because when you're in the craft, I'm sure everybody knows this, but they can turn the metal transparent and look outside like it's a window. They can turn the whole craft transparent even when they're traveling. So you can actually be, you know, when you're traveling through the stars, you can actually be standing in the stars as you're traveling. You know, it's quite cool.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the things that Frank went through, people trying to harm him and kill him and all those kind of things?
Well, you know, he... you know, his dream, you know, he first, let me tell you, when after he met Valiant, he wrote a book called My Friend from Beyond Earth, which was a small little leaflet, which was about Valiant. And then in 67, he published Stranger at the Pentagon, and it's gone through, I think, three different major publishings. But throughout the years, he traveled around the world telling this story. He spoke to, when he was in Korea, he actually was, met with a president there in the military, and he spoke at a stadium because there were so many of the Korean people who were so thrilled. In fact, his wife, she gave me a whole album of just his stay there, you know, when they went to Korea. So, but there were, you know, throughout the years, there were people who did try and harm him. And Dawn and Thon usually accompanied him when he traveled and just to watch over him. And on many occasions, saved his life. So, one was somebody when he was in Germany speaking over there, even on a panel that even Wernher von Braun was on. Somebody crushed up glass. They said, "Oh, you have a phone call." He was talking to these two journalists who were imposters. And when he returned, they were gone. But while he was away, they put crushed glass into his soup. How about that?
We got off the airplane there in Las Vegas in a car, and these two guys that were like the men in black picked him up.
Yeah. Yes, he was just so excited, and, when these men came up, he thought that they were from the crew, but what he realized was once he got in the car that the car was black and that they were dressed in black, and he knows that the crew members would never dress in all black. They did, and Dawn and Thawne came and took them. Their intentions were to take him out to the middle of the desert and kill him. Dawn and Thawne arrived and actually zapped them somewhere else. And I asked Dr. Frank, I said, "Well, where did they zap them?" And he said, "Well, I've asked that question for many years." And he says, "The only thing that comes to my mind, because they always just smile, they don't say anything, is, they sent them to the salt mines on Pluto or something, he didn't even know, but, but there were many, many times, that happened. When he was first married, somebody ran him and his wife while they were on their honeymoon off the road, and he was taken to the hospital, and he was paralyzed. Not sure if it was from the waist down or the neck down. I have to go back into the notes, but they said, that he was going to be paralyzed for the rest of his life. He was taken in the morning, and Valiant came in and did his healing on him. He put on his clothes and he walked out of the hospital that afternoon, to the amazement of the paramedics who were just arriving with somebody else, and the doctors and the nurses. They couldn't believe it.
Well, that's that's huge.
It's huge, and I myself have had an experience where I've received healing that actually came from Teal. I ended up having a bowel obstruction, and I was not feeling well for many days, and then I had to have somebody come and pick me up, a friend, and took me to the doctor. They tried to see, and then they rushed me in an ambulance to the hospital. They did x-rays and said they were going to have to operate in the morning. And that night, I woke up within my dream, and then I was awake with my eyes closed, and I felt Teal over me, and I felt bubbles going through my intestines. And I went, "Oh, my God, I'm going to wake up in the morning and I'm going to be fine," right? And do you know, I woke up in the morning and I opened my eyes. It was, I don't know, maybe 7, 8 in the morning. I look over. Dr. Frank is sitting in the chair, and he looked at me and he said, "Teal called me early this morning. She told me she fixed you right up." And they did x-rays again, and I went home that afternoon.
Wow.
Yeah. That's isn't that cool?
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Love it.
They are so lovely, by the way, and to all of your Starseed listeners and everyone, all you have to do is in your meditations is just hook up to them. You could hook up to Teal or any of them. We are all on blue beams, and they're the ship's technologies can censor everything that we're going through. If we're on course with our missions, if we're not feeling well, if something wrong is happening, it alerts the computer and then it, which is living, by the way, and also if you send your thoughts that way, it also goes there and also alerts them. So if people want to attend the night classes on Victor 1 or on the Starship, all they have to do is ask, and they can ask Teal. She takes care of all of that. And, you know, and sometimes Dr. Frank, when I first met him, told me that I was going to the night classes, that Teal said that I was there, but I never remembered for a while, and then all of a sudden I started remembering and getting little glimpses and things like that. So it was very, you know, very, very cool, because all of a sudden it started bleeding through. And if you ask for it to bleed through into your Earth consciousness, it will.
Yes, I agree with everything you said. There is a lady's name that I wanted to ask you about. Her name is Nancy Warren. And mm-hmm. I know that Frank talked about her quite a bit in the early stages of the first meeting with Valiant Thor. Is Nancy
yes.
Warren, is she still alive?
No, she had passed away many, many years before Dr. Frank. I think she may have passed away in the early 90s, Dr. Frank told me. Nancy Warren was a fictitious name made up for the book to protect her identity. But Dr. Frank assured me that she was in a very good place, confirmed by talking to Valiant, because Valiant really, really took to her. He was very, he really liked her a lot. He really liked her a lot. So, you know, it was, she was very special to him. And, you know, so I always, I always wish that I could have met her and, you know, also interviewed her. I met Dr. Frank in 2001, and we became fast friends. And do you know that when I was growing up, I literally lived 5 minutes from his doorstep?
Wow.
You know, isn't that something? But we became fast friends. We saw each other for lunch every week and spoke on the phone, you know, at least once a day or several times a day. And it was never my intention when I met him to write the screenplay to Stranger at the Pentagon. It all sort of happened organically and, you know, and just became very, you know, very exciting. And, you know, I read it in the 80s, and when I, you know, saw the photographs of Valiant Thor, Vice Commander Dawn, and Jill is the blonde, and Jill is the wife of Zan, who is the ship's doctor, by the way, just so, because a lot of people don't know that. And, you know, a lot of the other Vice Commanders, like Teal and Zan, and Yunaya and Yo, they're not spoken about in the book. You know, they were, you know, Dr. Frank had told me about them when I met him. So it was very interesting to learn about all, you know, the goings on. And, you know, that's not only is that a large crew, but to be stationed in 287 locations in and around the Earth. All those locations, by the way, around the Earth are also mentioned in Stranger at the Pentagon. So
let me ask you, when you wrote the screenplay, did you make Nancy Warren a pretty heavy character?
She is definitely a very good supporting character in the feature-length screenplay. The short film is just the main storyline of Valiant Thor, where he came from, coming here, meeting the president, and, you know, and then leaving a cliffhanger, you know, at the end of the short film. You know, to do that, where, you know, I you know, when I wrote it, it'll be about under 25 minutes, the short film, but We have 68 visual effects shots. You know, we did shoot on a lot on green screen. We will see Victor 1 out in the universe traveling. We'll see the giant mothership. We will be on board Victor 1 and on board the mothership as well in the landing bay, which will make every Starseed person cry, let me tell you, as I already have the artist renderings and Starseeds, and even people who are not awake who see it just weep because it's so sweepingly beautiful, you know, that you just, your heart says home, you know. And then we're just getting going on the visual effects now. The whole film is edited. We shot it in earlier this year. And if anybody's fans of Days of Our Life, Eileen Davidson, who plays Kristen DiMera on that show, and she also played Ashley Abbott on Y&R, she's playing Dina Thor, who is Val's wife. Jeff Joslin is playing Valiant Thor. And he starred in, I think, Medea Witness Protection with Tyler Perry. And Joshua Morrow, who plays Nick Newman on Y&R, plays Vice Commander Zan.
Sounds like a wonderful cast. Let's talk a little bit about where do these people come from, these beings? Where does Valiant Thor... What is his original home?
Their origin, I know that Teal's origin and Valiant Thor's origin and Dina Thor's origin is all from Venus. I believe that Dawn and Thawne are. I never asked that question, so I'm not sure. I know that Unaya's origin is on the opposite side of the universe. They're called numbered planets, and he's from planet 777, but his work is at Melchizedek, which is, you know, as you know, the universe's spiritual university. If you looked from one expanse to the other, it's 490 planets in the width and breadth of the site in the universe, and all of these planets are different university planets. So all people who graduate also from here will go through Melchizedek and then receive their next schooling of wherever they want to go learn. You know, each planet has its own learning and lessons. Of course, Venus is unconditional love, and boy, I can tell you that when I was writing the screenplay, and I was the most incredible experience was feeling each of them come to me and sharing their feeling body with me, not only their thoughts and their heart, but to feel their feeling body and this unconditional love. You literally, I would sit there and weep for, you know, quite some time before I would start to write, acclimating to this incredible vibrations, and then go into it. And Teal is really one of the most amazing teachers that I've ever experienced. You know, she will always show you how to look at things in many different lights, and, you know, all of that. So, yeah, she, and it's, by the way, it's spelled T-E-E-L, Teal. And by the way, on the website, if anybody is interested, you know, we're still raising money for the short film to finish it, and we're going to be the first Space Brother movie at Comic-Con next year. So isn't that going to be cool? So if anybody who doesn't have, you know, the book is out of print. Stranger at the Pentagon's out of print. Outwitting Tomorrow, which was co-authored by Valiant Thor, is out of print. Millennium 7 by Dr. Frank's out of print. And UFO Conspiracy by Dr. Frank's out of print. The posters of Victor 1 are out of print, and the posters of the Starship are out of print, and all of that. So all of those things, the publisher gave me all the remaining copies of everything just for the campaign so that we can raise the money. So, so if anybody would like any of that, I'm happy to autograph it for them. And they could just go to a stranger at the Pentagon and click on the button, Help Fund Short Film. And it's got all the tiers of, you know, everything that you can get, you know, there. So, you know, and even just for a $25 donation, people can get a Stranger at the Pentagon book autographed by me and an I Heart Valiant Thor wristband, which Lavendar has, and a downloadable copy of the movie when it's ready. But there's everything under the sun, even autographed copies of the screenplay, and people can become, you know, an executive producer or anything like that and get their name on the poster and all that good stuff. So, you know. But can you believe we're going to be the first Space Brother movie at Comic-Con next year?
That's great. And I know that a lot of Starseed listeners will want to participate in this. I would like to ask the next question about Venus, because this past week I just happened to see on the Weather Channel they had a special about Venus, how hot it was on the surface of Venus. So I'm wondering, you say they're from Venus, are they inside the planet? They can't be on top?
They are. Yes. All of the planets throughout our solar system here are all populated. They're all populated on the inside. They have the advanced technologies even when they even build the motherships, and they build different kinds of ships. They use that same technology, so they can build it with various floors. They have what we call synchrotron skies, which synchronizes the perfect temperature, the perfect light, and then as it goes in, and then it can fade into night, and you would have the same exact experience and not know anything. They have the formula that the universe is made of to create anything at will, because they are fully in full divine God consciousness. So it is quite spectacular, even on the Starship, which is the 14 miles long and 7 miles wide. That one, for instance, there's even giant outdoor settings with trees and waterfalls and lakes and rivers, and all of that is also on board. So all of these various levels, and they're not holograms. They're actually there. They just build them that way because they have the formula. And the resonation fields that they keep on board all of the crafts are what keeps them youthful. You know, everybody looks like they're 30 years old. And even Dr. Frank said every time he visited Victor 1, you go in, you take off all your clothes, you go through disinfecting, or what's the right word? I guess disinfecting or cleansing before you go on, and then they give you a suit to put on when you come on board. But if you needed your glasses or a cane or you had any kind of ailments, the minute you stepped on board, it's gone. You know, and when I was writing the script, he told me he was going to Vegas, and that he was going to go visit Victor One, and he actually called me from the ship, and I said, Dr. Frank, I said, where are you? And he said, I'm actually calling you from the ship. And I said, you sound like you're 20 years old. And, you know, and that's when he had also told me that story. So, I just find it fascinating. But, of course, once you step off and you're back in, you know, our 3D world here, it all goes back to normal. So he said, the thing is nobody ever wants to leave, you know. Okay. So, Yeah, there's been there is one of Dr. Frank's friends that he actually met through Val and Dawn was a gentleman named Dr. Lee, and Dr. Lee I think now is, I don't know, he's between 110 and 120. He lived in Van Nuys for many years, and actually Valiant and them actually moved him onto the ship so that they could just take better care of him there. But his son was asked in the 70s if he wanted to come live with them. So he married a girl from Venus and has been living on the starship ever since. So he stopped aging once he went and lived there.
Well, how about Frank? Did when he died, did he take another body, and is he aboard ship?
Well, you know, I've often wondered that. So, you know, he is around so much. Even all of my friends, you know, I shared Dr. Frank with everybody. I'd just lug him around, you know, and we would have parties, and people just loved meeting him, and everyone fell in love with him. And anyway, and so a lot of my friends, even to this day, will like call me up. If they even met him once, I go, I had the weirdest thing today. I felt Dr. Frank come around me just to say hello. You know, and I said, well, he was. But then I'll hear it from about three or four friends all at once. So I said, oh, Dr. Frank's making the rounds.
Uh-huh.
You know. So, and we did when we were filming. We had some wonderful things that happened when we were finishing the Oval Office set, and I was sitting at Eisenhower's desk, and I had somebody just take a bunch of pictures, and we got one gigantic orb in several pictures. And as you know, the giant orbs are angel energy. So we were blessed there. But when we were shooting, Jeff Joslin, who plays Valiant Thor, on his uniform, right below the gold on the blue, an anomaly showed up of an oval with a design in the center made of light. And it only showed up in still photography. And we had several cameras on both days, and it showed up there. So it was his insignia of telling us that he was quite happy with the way everything was going. I even had some of my spiritual friends who were there on the set who were just meditating and keeping the energy clear. And they even told me afterwards, they said that they saw when we did the scene with Val Thor and President Eisenhower, that they saw both of them overlight those actors. And when they actually went into that scene, it was amazing. They just transformed. It was incredible because, you know, that's a very poignant part in history right there.
Tell me the name of the actor that plays for Valiant Thor, and I'm going to look his picture up when we're through. What was his name?
His name is Jeff Joslin, Joslin. And you can see, you know, on the cover page of StrangerAtThePentagon.com, you can see little promos and the little Valiant Thor story that I put together in a video. So you can see him. Jeff in real life has full gray hair, but in the movie, of course, we darkened it. So,
well, don't you know, a lot of overshadowing, a lot of walk-ins. I mean, this had to be a spectacular event for everyone that participated in this movie. I'm sure that everyone that worked on it has had life-changing experiences already.
You know what? They really and truly have, and that it's helped them, and it's transformed them. And you know, Lavendar, people say to me that I never knew that that these beautiful beings existed. We hear about them in folklore and that angels exist, but, you know, to now, you know, see this. You know, it's been, you know, there's been many, there were other people, you know, many people around the world who have met Valiant Thor as well and his crew. They just don't come out and talk about it. You know, there are many people that Dr. Frank, you know, mentioned around the world that he was in contact with and that, you know, that he's still in contact with today, you know, and people in high places and governments and all of that. You know, he really here is overseeing the transformation so that the earth plane learns how to merge its duality, its light and dark, so that the heart works in unison with the mind and that this world will transform into being fully conscious like the rest of the universe, and then we can actually join with that universal society and be at one with them. And that's going to be such a cool day. That's why we're all here, I think, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I'd like to ask you if you could give us in detail, if you can, some more advanced technologies that are on board the Victor-class saucers.
Sure. Well, these technologies are not only on board the Victor-class saucers, but they're also on motherships and different larger crafts. A lot of these technologies, by the way, are also in my book, The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga, I Am Taran. And I'll explain quickly when I started writing. I had my spiritual awakening when I was 26. I was woken up by master teachers throughout the universe. That's a long story to go into, but when I started writing about all of these experiences, and I wrote a 400-page book. I went to Mount Shasta. I had an incredible experience with the I Am. I came back, and one of my master teachers said to me, "What would you say if we said you wrote that book for yourself?" And I said that I've learned a lot about myself. And he said, "Now it is time to write the real book." And that's when I started writing I Am Taran. So it's a trilogy. It'll always be called The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga, and then each book will be subtitled. So when I was, I started writing that when I was around 28, I believe, and it was first published on 11/11/11. But when I was writing, a lot when I would meditate, I would get a click in the back of my neck, and then a teacher would appear, and sometimes they would say something, and sometimes they would just transfer whatever it was, and then it would just bleed through my consciousness in the writing. And one day I saw this woman standing in front of a giant saucer with red hair and a powder blue uniform, very voluptuous, beautiful, with porcelain white skin and green eyes. And at the same time, I was writing all about Melchizedek, and I bought 3 sevens and I put them on my wall. Now this is in the early 90s. Then we flash forward. I moved into my new place in 2001, and as I set up my couches in the living room, now all of a sudden I start seeing the energy signatures of Valiant Thor and his crew members sitting on my couches. And, I mean, immediately. Now, I haven't read the book since the 80s. It wasn't even in my consciousness. And I was like, God, why are they there? It wasn't like I could see them physically. Every time I walked by for months, every hair on my arm would stand up. And I, you know, and then my casting partner at the time wanted me to meet her two friends who are an older couple, and she said they saw UFOs all the time. So I met them, and the first words out of the woman's mouth, she said, "You know, our friend Dr. Frank," and I went, "Strangest?" And she said, "Yes." And she said, "Do you want to meet him?" And I went, "Yeah." So 2 days later, I was sitting with Dr. Frank having lunch, and I realized that it was Valiant Thor who was connecting me to Dr. Frank. And then Dr. Frank went and to visit Victor Wen, and he came back and said, guess who said to say hello to you? And in the meantime, while I'm preparing things, you know, at the beginning of the script, I see the woman with the red hair from 10 years ago back in my consciousness talking to me and laughing and telling me what to do and this and that. And all of a sudden, and he said, Teal. And I went, oh, my God. So I said, does she have red hair? And we described her back. And he was like, yes. So I had, so way back when, even when I was writing the book, there Teal was also one of the teachers who was guiding me. And when he came back a second time, he said, Unaya said to say hello. And that's when I found out Unaya's planet of origin was 777. That's why I bought those three sevens and stuck them on the wall. So what I'm saying is all of this information was coming from their source, even from the beginning before I knew Dr. Frank, but also from the other teacher sources. So the organics on the ship, they have brains that are alive and that live on, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years. They can just keep going on. They keep it nourished just like, you know, everybody else. You can actually speak to the computer and have it answer to you in any voice that you would like it to be. So if you want it to be, you know, a very soft female voice, it'd be that, or you know, a pleasing, whatever you want, it will speak to you that way. It could speak to you telepathically. It could speak to you out loud as well. Some ships are capable. Some ships are thought ships. Teron actually has a thought ship. And his actual DNA is fused into the organic metal, and it is his pure thought. He thinks of the resonation field that they're in, and then he goes to the resonation field of where he wants to go. Now, he could travel into any universe, into a multiverse, or he could travel into any super universe, of which there's seven, but there you have to have clearance first before you do that. But he could think the ship there and be there actually in the next second. So those are thought ships, but those are beings who are really, really, really pure in thought. And then motherships can also do the jump, as they call them, the thought jump. Nothing is predicated on size. The regular craft can also bend space, as we all know. They go through these tunnels that were built by super beings long ago, and a lot of people don't even know how they were built. Some of them have closed up, but they still use those tunnels. And some of the even some of the craft, like let's say if one of Teron's crew members, if Teron was away, they could actually fly his ship, for instance, because they fused a piece of Teron's DNA with the other person's DNA as well. So there's, I mean, it gets into some really cool stuff. You know, but what's really cool is Victor One, you know, has many, many rooms and, you know, has a gym. It has everything under the sun. People can look at the blueprints there as well, you know, on the website. It's really, really cool.
Can you tell us a little bit about the power rod?
The power rod, what's that?
Is the power rod, which runs from the top to the bottom of the ship, is located directly in the center of Victor 1. This rod also powers the defense mechanism in the form of advanced laser-type equipment. It is from this rod that the laboratory and the medical treatment rooms are powered.
Ah, well, see, that I don't know. I never asked Dr. Frank about that. But, they travel also on beams, and they also Like when Victor One is at Lake Mead, they send a beam from the bottom of the ship that goes down and just anchors into rock so that it stays stationary as well. So, and their crafts are all of these crafts, by the way, that I've been describing. None of them have weapons. They only have deflector weapons. So, if something was fired upon them, they could disintegrate it or dissolve it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, this is just
they're about love. They're not about about war.
All of our listeners are just hanging on your every word. Let me ask you kind of a funny question. You know, we have a show that goes all over the world on Blog Talk Radio, from Australia to Japan, everywhere. And I'm just wondering if somehow the ships know that we're talking now and they're beaming their energies to the people that are listening. Is that possible?
Yes, absolutely. And usually what happens is they will beam it up there, and if they could be listening to it in real time, or they could record it and watch it in, you know, they could actually watch it and listen to it later. And because we're all the star seeds are on the blue beams anyway, they could be watching it with us actually talking in what they call the history hologram machine, which is sort of like beyond 3D television. Everything looks so dimensional I can't even explain it, but you could do it in a seat and watch it right before you, or you could do it in a theater and watch it. And what they have is history coins. And on these coins, they're about the size of a silver dollar, and they are silver, and they're etched in blue light, and they are recorded history from the Akashic Records. And so if you are allowed, you could watch the history coin of any person who lived on Earth, or if you're out there in the universe and want to watch on anybody else. So if you wanted to watch, you know, the life of Christ, if you wanted to watch Moses, if you wanted to watch, you know, Cleopatra, or, you know, ancient Rome, you know, you could watch it on the history coin machine and get it as it actually was recorded. And it's more of a capsulated version, so that you get the high points. But what you also get when you're watching this is you also get the feeling, the feelings and the emotions that went along with each of the people who were experiencing at that time. So it goes beyond a regular watching experience. You become a part of what they are. And then in watching it, you become a part of who they were, because you experienced who they were, and then they become sort of a part of your makeup. You know what? I just want to cry right now. I don't know why. I mean, can you imagine seeing that? Yeah.
And how about smell? Yeah. As you look at these records, can you actually smell the flowers and the things that you're seeing?
Yes. Everything.
Does that happen?
It's a full sensory experience. It is a full sensory experience.
You know, for the past few years, I've had this strange thing happen to me. Sometimes I'll be watching television, and I'll tune into the person that's playing that role, and all of a sudden I can smell them, and it really freaks me out, and I don't even know how I do that.
Do you know why? As I find that myself, because as we are all, you know, gaining more and more enlightenment as time goes on, we are becoming fully conscious. We are becoming telepathic. We are becoming all of these things, and they don't happen overnight. But all of a sudden, we start tuning into things that we normally don't do, and then we're starting to gain those sensory experiences that we're going to have full conscious of when we you know, hit that milestone in this lifetime.
Yeah, it just gets pretty weird when I start smelling patchouli off of an actor.
As long as the actress is not wearing poison, I'm good. Remember that perfume? Oh, my God.
They named it right, too, didn't they?
They sure did. I'll never forget when actress came in, she put a bottle on her, and she came in my office. I couldn't get that smell out for weeks. Oh, my God.
I have enjoyed talking to you so much. I'm going to turn the program now over to Arielle. I know she has some questions to ask you. And she also has a switchboard, which people are calling in, and they'd like to probably talk to you a little bit. But I want you to send me your birth information, and I know your starseed. I would just love to see your configuration, and let's talk later, because I was flashing on some things that I just wanted to tell you, but tell you in private.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I will. I'll email you as soon as we're done and send you all my info, too, okay?
Yes, you need to date, place, and time, and then also where you live now. Those are the things I need.
Yes.
Okay, Arielle, back to you.
All right. Hugging you, Lavendar.
Thank you.
Hi, Arielle.
Craig, your energy is just so buoyant and light and very, very enjoyable listening. I keep having flashes of Star Trek things you're describing, and I'm just a huge, huge Star Trek fan. All the way back to the original, simply because it's a world that I want to live in.
Yes.
You know, and that's I read what Sylvia Brown wrote about your book, in that you're kind of a modern-day Gene Roddenberry with a view to the future that's hopeful, optimistic, and uplifting. And I just got thrilled with that because, you know, Gene Roddenberry was also a contactee, although I don't know if he realized that consciously.
He did, yes, yeah. He did.
Well, I'm glad to hear that he did. I know that all that technology, even though we don't understand it, it's all based on a reality somewhere. It's just mind-boggling that these people, from the Victor One, are really involved in our planet, and they just don't get any press. So
no, they don't, and they are here in drones. You know, there are many races and species from all over this universe and other universes. They have even brought beings here from the world first created, where the great I Am is from. They have even brought beings who stepped down partial of their energies to come and incarnate here as well to bring forth all of this information about how you work with your own light and dark, your own duality, and how you become fully conscious and all of that. All of that is really beautifully executed in I Am Tehran through all of them. And it's really quite extraordinary. I mean, people have written me and say that it changed their life because they hadn't viewed things. And you get to learn about what the universe is and the setup of the universe and the incredible Starseed program that's coming out of Melchizedek and being placed on Earth while having a very fun time and a story that could also be a movie, but which I'm sure I Am Tehran will become a movie at some point. But to talk about Gene Roddenberry, you know, many people I know knew him. I never met him myself. They told me that he knew that he was receiving information from star people. And you want to hear another fascinating thing? Guess who we really have to thank besides Gene Roddenberry for Star Trek? You'll never guess in a million years, but it will make you smile.
his wife?
Lucille Ball. Lucille
Oh, yeah, that's
Ball.
Right.
She is the one who is the head of Desilu, or you know, which was RKO, who greenlit Star Trek and Mission Impossible. So if she hadn't greenlit it, it was turned down everywhere else, from what I understand. And Lucy is the one who did it. So, and Lucy also had a little vacation house in Sedona. So I'm sure Lucy was pretty enlightened.
Oh, absolutely, ahead of
yeah.
her time. And I do remember
oh,
that.
Yeah.
A documentary yeah. not too long ago on the creation of Star Trek, and so it was the feminine, it was the woman.
That that's right.
Her, you know, so yay.
That's right. That's right.
And she had red hair.
And she had red hair. That's it.
yeah,
yes,
so
indeed.
What am I thinking? Like superimpositions, layers and layers, all connected. I'm thinking of things and stories that Lavendar has told me, and things that you're telling me, and how it's just all jiving together. And I'm so pleased that that you are who you are and doing what you're doing, because you know the film industry really needs to. Balance out all the with uplifting messages about the future. All of the movies that come out that are they sell because there's alien invasion and war, and you know, that whole thing is
right.
so not about what they are about. You know?
No. We're going to bring with Stranger at the Pentagon and I Am Tehran, they are deeply spiritual stories with a message. So, and you know what? People like Spielberg brought those things, you know, forward with even with Close Encounters and E.T., of course. But, you know, the world really, really wants that. You know, I was speaking just earlier today to an ex-head of a studio who ran a studio for 12 years. And we were speaking about how even he, this is how, you know, somebody has to step out and start talking about this stuff. I have always talked about it from day one. You know, me being in the business and casting now for 30 years, and, you know, being in the business my whole life. And, but, you know, I was even talking to this ex-studio head who said, I realized at some point that it was about bringing enlightening material to the world, and that's what I'm trying to do right now. So we're going to start working together on some other things as well. But you know, but it's amazing. All the lights start turning on, and they're all starting to turn on here in Hollywood. You know, because a lot of people are saying that that's what they want. And so with Stranger at the Pentagon, and when it comes out as a feature film, and when it does extremely well, what will happen is all of Hollywood will say, well, what else does everybody got? And then
right.
those kinds
the
of, that kind of content, yes, that content starts getting made. And there's a lot of star seeds that have been preparing all of their screenplays and their books. And I know this because I hear Teal telling me this, and that they need to all be ready, because over the next 10 years, when this starts to explode, what's going to happen is, you know, you got to be in the right there, you know, to get it in there, you know, to get your stuff made. And now there is no excuse. Anybody can do this, you know. You can do anything on the internet. You know, even making the short film, I did two fundraising campaigns. I'm still, you know, raising money to do it. But and what I didn't understand was the lesson in all of that, because I woke up one morning and I heard Teal say in my head, she said, it's time to make the short film. I want you to do a campaign and put it on Kickstarter. And I went, okay. And I did it. Boom. There we had it. They're like, boom, there was the money. And I sat back and I was like, what is the lesson in this? And I heard the lesson in it was that it is for the people, by the people. It had to be the energy of all involved who wanted to see this, to make the change, to make these kinds of things happen. So I read, you know, so that was my lesson in it, you know, because I was like just waiting for, you know, somebody to write a big check to make the big one.
Right, right.
So, you know, but it's going to be so cool, and I'm just so excited about it. But like I said, people can watch the promos and stuff on strangerathepentagon.com. So, or if they want to check out I Am Taran, it's autobiography of on ANET.com. So there's lots of cool stuff to look through and see all the color artwork. By the way, I worked with an artist for over 3 years, bringing all of the ETs, the extraterrestrial worlds, the ships, and all of that to life. So there's over 40 renderings of all of this in I Am Taran, and in there's a whole extraterrestrial terminology in the back of the book. So,
okay.
You know, about the, you know, all that kind of stuff. So if anybody does want to read, by the way, if people have Kindle, it's like $3 right now on Amazon. So, you know, if people like reading on Kindle. So, but if people do read it, make sure you read the terminology in the back first. Do not read the ending of the book. It is the biggest surprise ending that people go crazy for. So don't ruin it by going to the end. You have to read it all the way through to get to the end. So, but it's really, really cool. So, so Ariel, what else do you want to know about Mr. Thor that I might know that I can share?
Have they been, how long have they been around? I mean, certainly their lifespan is enormous, or
yes.
Are they immortal?
Well, Valiant Thor and Yanaya are immortal. And the rest of the crew are born of man and woman. I don't know the exact length of their lifespan. I know Dr. Frank used to tease Teal asking how old she was. Because she could be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years old. She's so wise, and she's so much fun, you know. But usually each planet, by the way, will have its own, the beings that choose to go to a planet once they go back to Melchizedek, and then they go back out again. So let's say if they decided, you know, hypothetically to go to one planet and they were learning about this, the allotted time span in a lifetime to learn that is 1,200 years. So that might be the lifespan around for that planetary consciousness. Or if it could be 2,300 years, or it could be, you know, it could be 5,000 years. It all depends on what the learning and the length of time for the learning is, because some planets you can, they're so advanced that you can continue to learn and that kind of thing. Like the one cool thing about all of these ships, by the way, is that they're interdimensional. So you could be on board a mothership and see somebody walk from the fourth dimension into the eighth dimension, and then seeing this interaction between beings, like if they, like a ship is, could be multiple layered as well. So it's just not holding one, you know, like if a giant mothership had 3,000 floors and it had, you know, a million people on it, it could have 12 dimensions of that with different people. So those people could like go boop, like if you and I were talking, somebody could walk out of the dimension and go, oh, by the way, do you want to have blah, blah, blah dinner in, you know, in my dimension tonight? You know? And then they could, you know, or that kind of thing. You know, I mean, I know that was a little hokey, but... Hey. How's that for a line? That's like the old pickup line. You want to have dinner in my dimension tonight, baby?
Oh my God.
You know, that's funny.
Oh, well, you know, where
but,
I was going
but,
with
you know,
the lifespan question was to inquire if they were here during the time of Atlantis.
Well, Gino, I don't know if Valiant Thor was. I don't think Unaya was, but I really couldn't answer that. I know a lot of people feel that connection to that time period. Let me just explain something about starseeds, by the way, that is told by Taran. The starseed program, so let's say you go to Melchizedek and your next thing is you're going to become a starseed on Earth. For you to go through the entire program, you have to come to Earth and you have to incarnate as every race, color, creed, religion, so that you know what it's like to walk in each of those shoes, so that you gain that experience. Usually the lifetimes are short. Interestingly enough, I was doing a radio show a couple of weeks ago, and a lady called in who's been a nurse and she's fully awake. She's been a nurse for like 30 years, and she said, Craig, I can't believe all of these young people coming in. I recognize them as starseeds, and they're young. They're in their 20s. They're in their 30s, and they leave. When I was talking about the starseed thing, it finally clicked in for her, because you go out and then you come back in. And when you have gained all of that, then you come in with a greater mission and you become a mighty messenger, and you come in with a mission that is to help shift and change consciousness across the planet as well. So, you know, and again, all of these stations, none are higher or lower. They all work in unison and in community with each other for the greater good, because in the end, it's the evolvement of all of the beings. You know, they're able to see how everyone is growing. Everyone on Earth, these computers, keeps track of. They can see who is growing, what areas are not growing. Then that's how they incorporate more messengers or star seeds into those areas, so that they can, you know, move through the density of the consciousness there and then bring it up. So as we know, in the big cities and things, you know, things, consciousness raises quicker, but then even in the denser areas, you know, star seeds even go in there as well. So it's just a whole fascinating program. I mean, when you think about it and you think about everything, how it's all interconnected, and like, I knew I was going to love you guys. I couldn't wait to do your show.
Oh.
You know, I mean,
when I saw
you know,
your
just
and read a little bit about you, I thought, oh, he's one of us, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We are going to open the switchboard. If anyone would have a question or comment for Craig, you need to press 1 on your keypad so that we know you want to talk. And we actually have a question from our switchboard host, Miss Chris, and I'm going to let her come on first while we're waiting for...
Okay.
Anybody else to raise their hand. So
all right. Hi, Chris.
Okay, Chris.
Hi, Craig. Hi.
How are you?
Hi, Craig. I'm good.
Hi.
Thank you. I got, you know, the email that you were going to be on the show, and I don't do this often. Usually I read the book after the guest, you know, if I think the guest was really compelling to me. But I went to Amazon and downloaded your Turan book, on my Kindle.
Yeah.
And I intended to have it read before the show, but I'm only 67% done. But
I like that percentage.
Yes. So I wanted to tell you that I set aside an hour last night to read before I went to bed, and I started reading it, and I couldn't stay awake. And prior to that, I wasn't tired, so I got taken out last night after.
Yeah.
I finally just said, okay, yeah, I got taken out. So I just wanted to get that out on the airways to kind of confirm what you said about the reaction to it. I also feel like I'm not reading fiction. Is that correct?
Well, you're gonna know all of that on the very last page.
Okay.
It's definitely left up to the reader. So
It doesn't feel like fiction.
Yeah.
And
right.
And I said to Ariel before the show, I said, I kind of want to know if you're the alien.
Well, you're just gonna, you know, okay. Aren't we all?
Well,
you know, it's so funny. So, you know, before I sort of had my awakening, you know, I never really thought about where a soul comes from. You know, you're just here and you exist and you live your life in 3D. And when I had my awakening, I was like, oh my God, where do we come from? Where did the soul originate from? Where did, do you know? And then even when I had the notion, you know, oh, well, when Christ came here, Christ wasn't from here. Where did Christ come from? Where did this one come from? Where did, you know, and you start thinking and then you go, do you know what? We're just all the soul of the universe. So that's our home. You know, that's where we all really, really come from. But we just get to learn on all these different great planets and places and worlds and dimensions and, you know, all of that kind of cool stuff. So, by the way, you know, many people have said when they read the book, and I think you had that experience last night, is the words are encoded with an awakening code. And that when you get taken out, you go in and you start to assimilate so that it actually starts making even the cells in your body, your cellular memory of who you are, start to even enlighten more with golden light so that it awakens more and more and more. And then you start to see and then you start to contemplate and it just opens up your mind because, you know, the book not only opens up your mind to this universe, it opens up your mind all the way, you know, to the very first universe and the first super universe created as well, you know. And I know you've read all about that, as you know, too. So,
Lavendar has a saying about, you know, do you want to be right or do you want to be on time? And I feel like that this book for me is on time. And I also have to say, I thought that I was getting The Stranger in the Pentagon. I thought that, you know, this autobiography was, I was confused. But I'm not confused anymore. Anyway, the book is...
It all comes from the same source.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm going to have to go because somebody wants to ask a question, but thank you very much.
Right. Thank you, Chris.
Okay.
Okay, Chris.
Bye.
I will put you back in the switchboard host mode, and we'll have another caller with the question here in just a moment.
Okay.
So where do the Pleiadians fit into this?
Tehran is a Pleiadian, and I know that that's, you know, when we all talk about where our origins are from, that's where my soul originates from as well. When I was first waking up and I heard the word Pleiades, I sobbed and I cried and I sobbed and I cried, and I just knew it was home. And I, you know, it's something that you can't explain. And every time you meet a starseed, what's the one thing that they know? They know their planet of origin. And interestingly enough, the people that I've been meeting recently are all Arcturian. So I, you know, when I first woke up back in, you know, my late 20s, I was attracting lots and lots of people who were starseeds from Pleiades. And all of a sudden, a lot of people now were Arcturians. So it's just interesting, you know, that everybody really knows, you know, where their origins come from. You know, that's the one thing that's really, you know, ingrained into them.
They know it when they come across something like you did, and you just
yeah.
know without any
yeah.
other reason, but you just know. And
yes.
There is, just like on Star Trek, the Galactic Federation of United Worlds, and all working in cooperation. And
yes,
I'm gonna just, between
absolutely.
You and me and the few thousand people that are listening.
Listening, yeah. We call it in Tehran, it's called the Galactarian Alignment of Space, Peoples, and Planets, because it's an alignment of consciousness.
Right, right. Well, I was
yeah.
going to say, tell you a secret. every single night for, I don't know, like 20 years, the last thing I do is watch Star Trek, and I've seen all the episodes a million times, but it's that vibe of, you know, universal cooperation and peace, and you know, there's no hunger and war, and well, every once in a while the Romulans cause a little problem, but
right.
you know, I mean, for the most part, I mean, that is the my nightcap every night is a little bit of
oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I am a total fan. I love the new movies that J.J. Abrams is doing. And a little trivia is I had the spacesuits designed for the Stranger at the Pentagon short film, and Eastern Costume built them. I know them well there. I used to rent office space there when I was casting movies throughout the years because it was close to my house. So the owner did us a great favor and really helped us with all the costumes and period pieces and military uniforms and all of that. But they actually built the spacesuits from the designs that I had done up. And the gentleman who is the master tailor there, I've known for years, he built them for us. And I found out afterwards he's the same guy that built all the Star Trek uniforms for their first movies.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that wild? And he told me that Universal Studios was over there, and they saw all of my spacesuits, you know, hanging on dummies as he was working on them, and they were like, "Oh, we want all of those for our movie." And he was like, "Oh no, these aren't yours."
the coming full circle there. Well, we have another call
yeah.
for you, and we are going to be talking to Jane from San Antonio. Jane, you're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, Craig. How are you? Hi, Ariel.
Hello.
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I love listening to your voice. I have just a very I tuned in late, and I would really like if you would repeat the names of your books and also your website. But you just mentioned Arcturus, and I had just a very quick question you may or may not know the answer to. When I first had my awakening, I call it my cocoa hit, I was I was 40, and I
right.
went and had a reading, and the lady who gave me the reading talked about Arcturus. Now, I didn't know very much about that, and I still don't. And then I went to another reading sometime in the last 20 years, and they mentioned Sirius. And both of those places I had a resonance with. You know, there was this sort of knowing.
Yeah.
But in your experience with the people and the beings that you speak with, are there, like, musical resonances that come from those particular places? If you're a being, say, from Arcturus, would you have a a resonance, like a, I'll call it a musical resonance, that would be specific to there?
I would definitely say yes. I mean, Sirius and Arcturus, they are very advanced races. They're highly, highly spiritual, as well as Pleiadian and Andromedan. That's really interesting you say that, because, you know, some people do have that sort of musical essence. There's some that have come across my path in meditations and things over the years, and sometimes it's a scent, or sometimes it's like they have it's almost like a silent musical harmony about them. It's like, you can't explain it, but it's...
sort of connect with them without ever saying a word.
Yes, exactly. And it's really about the exchange of soul energy. That's what it is in the end, you know.
Okay.
It's that exchange. You know, what we were talking about, well, I know you probably didn't hear, but if you go back and re-listen to the show about the history coins, you know, when you're watching, like if you were watching, you know, we'll just say the life of Jesus, for instance, you would become an active participant with everyone in that little, watching the little theater that it's being portrayed in, and you would feel and sense in every sensory perception of what they're feeling.
Yes.
So then their lives become a part of yours, you know.
Okay.
It's
and
so
what does that mean
amazing.
When you have that? Because there are times when I watch things, and there's a definite connection, and I don't know what to do with it. What does it mean?
Well, all it is it's bringing it into your own vibration, so that you, through your own joy with people throughout life, they will also start picking up on that resonance, and that helps. It just raises your light little by little helps your enlightenment go up. And then you actually, when you meet people, they're just like, wow. Do you know? I mean, sometimes I go out and I forget to pull my aura in after doing these meditations, and people, like, everyone's staring at me, you know, and I'm like, oh, gotta pull that thing in, you know? I mean, I often wonder, I go, God, what would it be like if, like, Valiant Thor walked down the street? I'm sure he has to pull his energy
way
in.
Like, ears.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Exactly. But the websites, again, are Stranger at the Pentagon, and you can get all the out-of-print books and stuff there for making a donation to this short film. You can just check it out there. It's all on there. And the I Am Tehran, if you want to autograph copies, that website is autobiography of anet.com. And you can just email me there.
And how are you spelling Tehran?
Oh, Tehran is T-H-Y-R-O-N. By the way, everyone calls him Thyroid, Tyrone.
Yeah.
I've heard, you know, Thyron, that's the one. Just everyone always says Thyron because it looks like that. But it's actually Tehran. Tehran, Tehran.
Okay.
Tehran. So.
No.
But I know. But so thank you.
Okay.
And
listen to the rerun of this to catch it all. But I really had to call because of your voice.
Oh, thank you so much.
So,
bless
you. I don't know what that's about. No, it's cool. So keep talking. I'm going to get off. And
thanks, Jane.
Yep.
All right. Bye bye.
Thanks for calling, Jane. Bye bye.
That was nice.
Yeah, we really have a wonderful audience. They're awake, they're open, they're high consciousness, and I can't believe we're coming to the end of the show already, and feels like we could go on and on and on. So you know what that means? You have to come back.
Oh, I would love to. Anytime, you know.
Sure.
It would be
sure,
really, really fun.
Welcome your return at any time. And make sure you send your information to Lavendar, because I know
I am.
Yeah, she will. What she can tune into will just bring you a lot of tying ends and pieces together and
things that you know that you forgot?
Yes, of course. Oh, that's so cool. And, you know, don't forget, everyone, that they can, you know, call upon Teal if they want to go to those night classes, you know. Just imagine a blue beam going to Lake Mead from your body over there and, you know, say you want to attend the night classes because, you know, you learn a lot and then it gets brought back and then it's assimilated. The information is assimilated through your own intuition where you start picking up on different, you know, going, oh, wow, I could really have done it this way, or I could have treated that situation this way, or it might be something huge, like something breaking into your consciousness about the universe, which then expands more into different areas of thought. So, and, you know, sometimes you, and then also say that you want to keep remembering as well, you know, because a lot of people do remember going into the night classes and coming back.
I think that will really help a lot of people because probably the most common question that I get, because I do the starseed confirmations, which is just kind of like the entry level where people want to see through Lavendar's discovery of the star markings that learned through the Pleiadians, that there are certain in an astrological chart that give you clues as to what your rites of passage. Well, they're not clues, they're more blatant than that, but people always say, well, okay, but what's my mission? And it's like your mission is really whatever you have the rites of passage to do based on your learning to, you know, and all of your Akashic records, this is what you have graduated from, so this is what you have to do again. But for the most part, really, starseeds are just to be here and add their light to help raise the consciousness, and that is a mission in of itself. And I think that your work is really going to help drive that point home and do a lot of good for a lot of people in opening those doors to higher consciousness. And we're just so blessed that you are here with us alive in these days doing what you do as with such a generous heart. And we would just love to have you come back on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I so enjoyed being here with you guys, and I'm so glad that you said that at the end, because that is another big part of Teal's teachings as well, which is, you know, everybody wants to know what they're supposed to be doing, and they're supposed to be working on themselves spiritually, not entering others' dramas, and that's what they're here for. Each person is here to work on themselves, not others. They're not here to fix others. They're here to fix and work on themselves and to help and assist others, but not to join in if it's something, you know. The dramas, as we all know. So, you know, and I just think, you know, that really and truly is a thing, and that's how, you know, that's how it'll, you know, raise their own vibration and all of that. And, you know, and you can even see, you know, sometimes some people remember going into Doc's quarters, or, you know, Vice Commander Zan, who's the doctor for the starseeds. Sometimes, you know, you'll get your measure, you know, how long you've been, you know, how long you've, you know, if you need to work on certain areas or that, and they give that to you, but it comes through your own intuition. So, and then as you wake up more and more, you'll start to gain more, you know.
Right. There really is
more remembrance.
It's such a part of such a divine plan, because obviously if someone throw all the lights on at once, that would be too shocking. So it has to be an evolution on a fast track maybe, but still it's a process that has to happen. And more and more people are just waking up through various catalysts that are happening, but the time frame is really speeding up. Like you said much earlier in the show, the time is now. It's time to do it. You know, the time you know, the snail's pace and the turtle's pace, that has already passed. And time is really accelerating.
I mean, it's flying by for me. I don't know about
it's
you, but
it's really, really accelerating. And, you know, the thing is you know, when we start having these big shifts and the world really starts to change and the universe starts to become more and more a part of earthly consciousness and all of that, everybody has to, you know, be up there on a conscious level where it's going to affect them in a good way and not in a fearful way, because it's not about, you know, as we all know, it's not about the fear. So that's what they're waiting for, is the earth consciousness resonance field to be at a certain point where more and more and more will be revealed as time goes on. So and also these things through the movies, like we're all trying, you know, to get out there and put out there and all that good stuff. And I know that my friends who own the Integratron, they're three sisters, they've got, they're working on George Van Tassel's story as well.
Oh,
so,
Lavendar, you got 5 minutes to make a comment on that.
Oh, I don't have time. That's a long story. I'll tell you
that's
about
a long story.
Yeah, I have many things to say about George Van Tassel. He's the one that really took me out on the sand dunes and just blew my mind about walk-ins and all kinds of things in 1977. And,
oh,
and on our website, you can, I mean, on the archives, there's a story called Crack Between the Worlds, and it's a story that I've held in the bank vault for the last 30 years. And it starts out with what George Van Tassel, what he put me onto back in 1977. So.
Oh, my God. See, that's so many. And do you know that Dr. Frank emceed all of the space conventions even before he met Valiant Thor? Did you know that?
No, I didn't know. Well, then, therefore,
yes,
I probably
I mean, they're
him.
All... They're all interconnected, and George Van Tassel was the first person to ever channel Ashtar as well.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Oh, I've had a lot of... In fact, when George died, was put in charge of his burial, his funeral, his memorial, all of that. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
That's like,
oh, my gosh. What?
We have a lot to talk about when you call me.
I know.
We set up an appointment to talk about your chart, okay?
Okay, I'm going to send you all that stuff.
Okay.
And the, Craig, the link that I sent you for our feature story, which is called Craft Between the Worlds, there's a... I told you how to get to the section that you really need to hear before you talk to Lavendar about that. Yeah, and don't listen to it while you're driving.
Right. I won't.
Yeah, people have been known to drive off the road, so oh, my gosh. Well, we just laid the foundation for the whole next show, and we're going to have you back as soon as we can, and you can get Lavendar about the scheduling of that. Oh, well, welcome.
That would be so much fun. I'm happy to come on any time and as much as you want. That would be so much fun.
We have just really hit a chord of resonance between everybody here on the staff and in the audience and you and your work and you know, Val and that whole crew, everybody, it's all interconnected, and I'm just so energized.
They
right
do.
Now. Talk, but
I know, and you know, they love everybody so much. I mean, they really, you can feel it when you tune into them. And I've been lucky and I had the experience through the writing where they shared themselves with me. So, you know, it's amazing. So all anybody has to do is just tune into that resonation of Victor One over there at Lake Mead and just feel all that love coming at them, you know. And I know they're sending it to all of you.
Well, I know that we're going to be getting email after this show. But once again, your website is Craig Campobasso, CampobasSO.com, and autobiography of an ET.com and StrangerInThePentagon.com. Everybody, please, out.
Yeah, Stranger at the Pentagon.
Oh, did I say in?
Sorry.
Yeah, Stranger. You said in, and it's, yeah, strangeratthepentagon.com and autobiography of an A-N-E-T.
Of an E-T.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Craig, until we meet again in the hopefully very near future, I want to thank you so much for sharing this time with us in our audience, and we will talk to you again real soon.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you all. Bless you all. Have a beautiful evening.
We sure will. And on behalf of everyone here at Starseed Radio Academy, thanks for listening, and we will be back next week. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.